They're not going to get away with it.
Oh, now, Lila, honey.
Don't you, Lila, honey, me, Hal Brackett. I'm through with pictures, dear, here. Through. I'll never make another picture as long as I live. And that's final.
What am I going to do, Maxie?
Oh, don't take it to heart, Hal. Every year it's the same thing. Just because she doesn't win a film award, she goes crazy.
That was an excerpt from Oscar Wilde. And now that in our series, A Film Worth Remembering, which is more than can be said for the next half hour.
However, for those who happen to be glued to their sets, try steaming yourself off. Then I'm afraid we'll give you some idea of what to expect from a sort of radio show which is beyond our ken. Among those taking part are Sir Hugh Dunnett, the male voices of the Luton Girls Choir, Lee Wong Hu Tong Parkinson, Miss Susan Searchlight.
She's a bit broad in the beam.
To continue, Molly Bund, the Burgomaster of Bridlington, and of course, it's Kenneth Horne who prefers to remain anonymous. Ladies and gentlemen, Kenneth Horne.
Well, good evening. This is Beyond Our Ken, and you're welcome to it. I don't think I've ever said it that way before. It's funny. At least I presume it was supposed to be, anyhow. Now, well, let me, as usual, tell you some of the things that happened during this week. On Monday, I witnessed an amusing incident in the West End when a motorist started going the wrong way up a one-way street. A policeman stopped him and said, "You can't go up here." And the motorist said, "Well, never mind. It can't be very interesting. They're all coming back." Wednesday, well, I didn't have much to do, so I bought a load of clay and just potted around at home. Thursday. Now, Thursday, something most extraordinary happened. I was giving the living room carpet its weekly going over when suddenly I heard a voice. So I switched the cleaner off, opened the dust bag, and do you know, a head popped out and said, "Hello."
Thanks ever so for letting me out. After the useless empty life I've been leading, now I can go out and do something worthwhile. My trouble is I've been living in a vacuum.
Well, on Friday, I attended a very important meeting to discuss the whole future of television. And since it affects all of us, I thought I'd invite to the studio today Sir Eustace de Risque Gesture. He is director of The Terrifying Moment. Ah, sir, I'm sure we'd all be interested to hear a statement of general policy from you.
Well, thank you. Well, of course, television, or to give it its technical name, tele, is a matter of super-identification through a medium as yet foreign to the natural instincts of the civilized people who have inherited, as all civilized people must, the progressive advancement towards a sympathetic understanding with those who serve the ever-constant section of the overcritical, overpopulated, and often pseudo-intellectual viewing members. Which leads me to the assumption that the time is not yet here, when it is possible to distribute in equal proportion the content which should all merit a widespread inclusion in future television commitments.
And to sum it all up, Sir Eustace, you would say,
why not go to the pictures?
Or better still, listen to Beyond Our Ken, and at this moment in particular to Jill Day.
Never could find. to lean on you. Honor and obey, give you your way. Do what you say. For G, it's all fine and dandy, sugar candy, when I'm with you. Now I always see the sunny side, even troubles have their funny side. When you're near, sugar candy, I'm not lonesome and I'm not blue. When you're handy, it's fine and dandy, but when you're gone, what can I do? It's all fine and dandy, sugar candy, when I'm with you. Now I always see the sunny side, even troubles have their funny side. When you're near, sugar candy, I'm not lonesome and I'm not blue. When you're handy, it's fine and dandy, but I just can't live without you. Honey, I'm just mad about you. When you're handy, it's fine and dandy, but when you're gone, what can I do?
Darling, I feel, and to quote an old cliche, pardon me, your slip is showing.
Oh, is it? Thank you, Ken.
Mind you, it's a very pretty petticoat, and may I ask you where you got it?
Petticoat Lane.
Well, now, it's funny you should say that. Isn't that strange? Because that's what our little dramatic offering is about this week. So stand by for the Petticoat Lane story. Started one evening when Dr. Herbert Ludlow and his friend Hetherington were strolling through London's famous Petticoat Lane. Really, Herbert, I don't know why we had to come through here. Everybody's laughing at us in our evening cloak. And I feel a proper Charlie with this opera hat on.
I'm not surprised, Hetherington. You're supposed to open it out first.
Hey, boys, come and have a butchers at this pop in the cloak of flat act.
See what I mean, Herbert? What are we doing here, anyway?
Well, you know, I'm interested in the spoken word. I like to study language.
Well, you'll hear plenty of that in Petticoat Lane.
No. You see, my dear Hetherington, I've conceived a new idea. I want to find a young, inexperienced girl.
Well, that's hardly a new idea for you.
I haven't finished.
Oh.
When I find her, I shall turn her into a fine and beautiful person. A sort of female me.
Ah, look, Hetherington, there.
That's the sort of girl I mean.
But she's 12 feet tall with a green face.
Oh, Hetherington, honestly, she's got 6 baskets of vegetables on her head. Hey there, you with the broccoli on your bun. A word with you, working class wench.
All right, partner. Wait a minute, wait till I drop me basket. Oh, that's a load off me mind. Got some fruit here and all. Like some fruit, sir. Look at this. Isn't it beautiful?
What a lovely pear.
Only a penny, sir. Oh, there's apples and oranges.
Oh, come on, Herbert. Let's go down the stand.
Have a banana.
No, I'm not interested in your fruit, gal. It's you that fascinates me.
Oh, Arcady. Go on. Get out of it, or you'll get this matter right across your mush.
Charming.
Oh,
Hetherington, this is the girl, all right. What's your name?
Maggie Sprog. Well, what do you want with me, eh?
I'm Dr. Ludlow. How would you like to speak English?
Oh, stern occurs. What do you think she's speaking now? Perish in Peruvian? I'd like to see you try and talk like this.
Yes, perhaps the doctor would care for a few lessons, eh?
Do you think you could teach me?
Herbert, you're not serious.
Why not? It must be an amusing experiment.
All right, then, Mike. I'll do it.
If you called starters, Maggie, you could never unposh him in a month of Sundays.
Give me 6 months, Alf, and I'll bet you I could pass him off as one of them.
You're on, Maggie. How much?
Half a nicker.
It's ordinary people, they don't even bet in money.
All right, then it's settled. Where are our de-elocution lessons to take place?
My place. Here's the address.
Thank you.
Well, Doctor, see you tomorrow then, eh? Ta-ta.
Get your dirty great plate of meat, up them perishing apples and pears, a bit sharpish, up them perishing apples and pears.
Oh, you're a complete dead load.
Well,
you'd better try something else with Charlie. Oh, now, Horrible Horace hits his 40 horse Hector hard on the head with a heavy hammer.
Horrible Horace hits his 40 horse Hector hard on the head with a heavy hammer.
Oh. How now, brown cow?
How now, brown cow?
No good. I don't know. You and your precious vow.
Oh, well.
You know your trouble. You're vowel-minded. Now then, come on. After me. How now, brown cow?
How now, brown cow?
How now, brown cow?
I saw very little of the doctor during the next few months. He came to the club once. Now, already I couldn't help noticing a change in him. He wore corduroy breeches tied at the ankles with string, a torn sport coat and a cloth cap. In fact, they'd never have let him in if he hadn't been wearing the club tie.
On the other hand, I caught the old transformation taking place. Maggie worked real hard. Good job the union didn't find out. And old Herbert Ludlow himself didn't do badly, neither. Once he nearly spoilt everything by having a bath. Still, at the end of the allotted time, all was ready for the big test.
Well, here we are. Fred's transport cap. Suit you up?
Yes. If you can pass him off in there, you'll win your wager.
Right. Let's have a last butcher at him. Yes. Oh, poor lummy. Herbert, how many times have I told you? Take them stats off. It's better now. Now listen, remember everything I learned you. And if you're not sure, then keep your yak shut.
Well, come on in. In we go.
So what's your Fred?
What's your Maggie? Alf? Hello? Who's this thing?
A new opera allower, Bert Ludlow.
Oh, glad to know you, Bert. I'm Fred, and this is my old woman.
How now, brown cow?
Lummy, he's a car, this one.
Wouldn't it be? Cheers is a cup of char and some egg and chip.
All right, mate. Well, what's new?
Horrible Horace, it is all the old sector. Horrible.
What's he going on about?
Oh, nothing. Yes, he has been acting a bit strange. He was at it on the Eddy Dock.
When?
Right now.
Lummy, don't he fall hard? Oh, you all right?
Oh,
thank you. I'll keep your hand up.
It's frightening, isn't it, Otis? I'm afraid I slipped down on my posterior.
He's a fool!
Oh, you right, Herbert. You've spoilt everything.
Maggie, put down that plate of egg and chips.
Take that!
Well, that's settled.
I'm going back to Kensington Gore, where I belong.
How nice. What have I done? You never forgive me.
No, you've given him a real chip on his shoulder. Maggie. You haven't gone and fallen in love with him, have you?
Oh, Elf, I think I have. Oh, no, it's hopeless. I mean, him being who he is and me being what I am. Oh, Elf, what am I going to do?
Cheer up, old girl. Stop blubbering in your tea. Waking up in here already. No. Listen to your old mate, Al.
What?
If it didn't work out this way, then why not try it the other way?
You mean me try and become a lady?
Why not? You can do it.
All right, I will. Oh, Al, you're a real chum when someone's down.
Just one thing, love.
What's that?
You owe me half a knicker.
Oh, no.
Dr. Ludlow came back to his proper social circle, I, for one, was very glad. In the first place, he was a good friend. And in the second place, well, I haven't said a word for about 3 pages. We took up where we left off, and most nights, I'd dine with him at his palatial home. Then one evening, several months later, as we were taking port in the library...
Come in, Parkinson.
Excuse me, sir. There's a lady to see you.
Send her in, Parkinson.
Very good, sir. This way, please. Miss Maggie Gore-Sprog.
How do you do, Herbert? Miss Edrington, how frightfully nice to see you again. Yes, Herbert, it is I. So no need that you look so startled. Yes. Now you come to the point. I'm here to ask you the time-honored and classical question. Will you marry me?
Well, what do you say to that, Herbert? Now, come on, let's hear the time-honored and classical reply.
It's your dirty great place to meet up them apples and pears a bit sharpy.
Now here are 4 people who can take a song and mold it in their own particular fashion. The Fraser Hayes Four.
Down yonder someone beckons to me. Down yonder someone reckons on me. I seem to see a raging memory between the Natchez and the Robert E. Funny shore, I miss you more and more every day, my mammy land. You're simply grand. Down yonder where the folks get the news. Don't wonder at the hullabaloo. There's Daddy and Mammy, there's Ethan and Sammy, waiting down yonder for me.
And third, the Kenneth Horne documentary feature, Horne-O-Rama. Yes, once again, Kenneth Horne and his team of investigators bring you a factual report on topics of immediate interest. And this week, we present a close-up on the arts.
Well, now, first of all, we have a word with one of our modern poets, Stanley Bysshe Berkenshaw. Delighted to meet you, sir.
The pleasure's mine, I assure you.
Now then, I wonder if we can prevail upon you to give us one of your poems.
Certainly, no prevalation necessary. I should like to recite you one of my latest sonnets called simply The Sea. Softly in silken strips of sunshine, a stream slips slowly to a silvery sea, a swift and swirling serpent on some distant shore, and sitting sad and solemn.
Yes, thank you very much. I think we've had enough.
So, what's the matter? Don't you like the way it flows?
I was deeply affected by it, actually. So were the first three rows. Now we're privileged to meet one of our finest ballet dancers. Good evening, sir. Good evening.
Thank you for asking. Yeah. Thank you.
Well, now, I suppose your career as a ballet dancer has been exciting.
Oh, yes. I'm dangerous, too.
Dangerous?
Yes. Oh, yes. I remember once I lost control in a pirouette and I nearly screwed myself into the stage. On another occasion, I had a very nasty accident.
What was that?
I wicked myself in the entrejar. Very nasty.
I'm sure. Could I have a word just a moment, please?
Yes, sorry.
I presume you've danced in most of the famous ballets.
Oh, yes, I've done them all. My last appearance was in a Swan Lake thing.
Oh, really? Lacta Senior?
Well, you should have come along. There was plenty.
Tell us, sir. How long have you actually been dancing?
35 years.
How long?
35 years.
And looking back on your remarkable career, that's 35 years of dancing.
Yes.
Have you perhaps some comment to make?
Yes, my feet are killing me.
Let us now consider the theater, and in particular the performer whose months of hard preparatory work eventually culminates in that moment of exciting fulfillment, opening night.
Come in. Hello, Rodney.
Hello, Charles.
I don't think you know everyone. Yeah. Julian. Yeah, nice. You're all in here. What would you think, Rodder?
Pardon?
Yes? What would you think?
Oh, love God, please, Charles.
You heard the thing, Rodder?
Thank you.
Well, everyone, what do you think of the show?
Good heavens, look at the time. I must fly. Goodbye, Charles.
Yes, thank you.
Thank you.
Bye.
Goodbye.
Now that those idiots are gone, we can talk more intimately. Really, your opinion I value most, Rodder.
Well, Charles, I thought it was absolutely abysmal. The scenery
the costume, everything sheer tack.
Yes, but what about my fault?
Dear God, it's not your fault. You're just helplessly miscast.
Of course I am.
Helpless. You should have had the other part.
Oh, no. You see, honestly, Roderick, I pleaded with the management.
Yes.
I'd have been so much better as the front end of the hall.
Well, yes.
Finally, we turn once again to our panel of experts in Hornorama, who are ready to discuss at random questions on this week's topic. Now, top of the table, prominent non-entity, Dalcom Diveridge.
Good evening.
Next to him, one of our regulars, playwright Seamus O'Toole.
Where did we get the money?
This week's guest, film critic Dillis Trowell.
Hello.
And lastly, our stalwart of the countryside, Arthur Fallowfield, dear old Greenfingers.
I've been painting the outhouse.
Oh. Well, now, that's our panel, and so to this week's question on the arts, which comes from...
Felix Bonehead. I should like to ask him, are more people going to the cinema?
Thank you, sir. Or madam. Are more people going to the cinema?
Yes, definitely. I would say that more people are going to the cinemas today to play bingo.
Yes, well, I think it's quite true to say that more people are going to the cinemas, and I try to ask myself why. And, you know, I can't help feeling that the real reason why people who go to the cinema is to see films.
Yes, yes.
Personally, I find the cinema a most compelling art form. I know on many occasions I have been consistently moved from the 7 and 6 to the 2 and 3.
Oh, why don't you shove a carrot in your cake, old...
All right, let's hear from you on the subject.
Well, I think the answer lies in the soil. I mean, why does anyone want to go into a make-believe world of the cinema when you can find love and adventure down any country lane? I've seen him on a Saturday night.
Well, thank you.
Well, of course, the recent contributions made to the cinema by the foreign filmmakers has considerably enhanced the cinema's prestige. Take the recent Japanese classic, Carry On, Harry Carry. You know, the tremendous background detail and the great quality of camera work. That sense of communication between artist and director, bringing together the transient charm of this particular art.
What is that woman talking?
Now, I don't know. Who cares anyway? Come on, let's get to the booth and the drink. Are you coming, Deborah?
Yes, Simon.
And when one considers the objective view of the films as a whole, one must be...
Go on, dear. I shouldn't bother them, are you? Anyway, it's time to wrap up.
How dare you?
This week's discussion. Well, there we are. There'll be another Hornorama next week when the subject will be the tea industry. Is it going to pop? Also in next week's program, we shall be discussing a new book, The Oxen, and bringing you a beef extract. Will be an excerpt from the new film starring Sammy Davis Jr. and told the G.H. Eliot story. Well, that's all for now. So until next week at the same time, this is Kenneth Horne saying goodbye for now and leaving you with this thought from the listener in action. If a glowworm had his tail cut off, would he be delighted? Good night.